In opening this meeting, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of this land, the Wiradjuri people, and pay my respects to their elders past and present. I'd also like to note that this meeting is being audio recorded, and the audio recording will be available on the council's website within 2 weeks of the date of this meeting. The basis on which the audio recording is being taken is set out in the business paper for this meeting. Apologies and applications for leave of absence, Mr. Chair, we've got any apologies?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and our councillor Walker is an apology to that.
So I'd like to move we accept an apology to councillor Best and councillor Durkin. Those in favour?
Aye.
Carried. Confirmation of minutes of the previous meeting. They have been circulated. So I'd like to move they be accepted as a correct record. Councillor Newstead, councillor Durkin, thank you. Those in favour?
Aye.
Carried. Any matters arising from the minutes not otherwise dealt with, do you would like to raise? If not, I'll move on. Disclosures of interest. Do you have any disclosures of interest?
No, I haven't received any, Mr. Chairman.
No disclosures of interest. Public forum. Any public forum?
No.
No public forum.
No.
Chairperson's minute. There's no chairperson's minute. Moving on to item 10. Setting a cracking pace. Item 10, councillor representation. It is in fact quite some time since we had our last council meeting, and I reported on my representation of CEW at various events. I do have a list of the things I have represented CEW at since that meeting on 16th of June. I will hand this list to Chantal and they can be incorporated into the minutes, but mostly meetings of the joint organisation or various presentations from water infrastructure, audit committee meeting of Lachlan Valley Water, meeting on the Lachlan Valley Bridge of Water Security, and the meeting on the Bolivia Water Security Project. Other councillors want to record representation? Okay, so Chantal, I'll hand that to you. Notices of motion, item 11.
Okay, second.
No notices of motion. Yeah. Okay, so we move on to item 12, reports of staff. 12.1, deferral in the election of the chairman and the deputy chairman, page 3 of the business paper. Recommendation is that we note the report and note that the terms of the council's chairman and deputy chairman continue but become vacant on the 4th of December. Someone like to move that?
I will.
Councillor Lurgan, Councillor Best, thank you. It's just for noting.
One question, it says the absence of legislative provisions for the deputy chairman. Is that something that we should then have in our policies?
It's something we should update in our model code of meeting practice. That's because of the COVID. Usually we have the election in October, but because the election is only, 6 weeks away, and with the election last year of our chair and the deputy chair, there was no end date with that. There's been legislation change for the chairman as a chairperson, as stated here, which covers that period. But that's something we'll have to update. We can do that at a time when they also update the model code meeting practice to allow audio visual link.
Yep.
Meeting via audio visual link as well.
Yes, I have a quick look at this. I don't think we need to say anything about the term of the chairman is covered in the legislation. The term of the deputy chairman is not covered, but the Act says that all members of the county council vacate office when they cease to be a councillor on their constituent council, and we all cease to be a councillor on our constituent councils on the 4th of December. So automatically, the deputy chair will cease to be a councillor and therefore cease to be deputy chair. Those in favour?
Aye.
Item 4.2, page 4, meeting dates. This is a recommendation that we move our December meeting to the 17th of November. I think council has already been notified of that, and the purpose of that meeting particularly is to perform two statutory functions which we need to do before the council elections. Would someone like to move that? Councillor Durkin, Councillor Newstead. Thank you. Any questions for Gavin?
I'm going to follow this later meeting, whether it's in December or November, because I've got a new job driving a fuel truck and coming into harbour, so
yeah. It's
going to be quite difficult to get away, unless you're really desperate for a quorum.
Yeah, and that's fine. And the other thing we could do, it won't help the quorum side of things, but if you were available or you wanted to sitting on the presentation, we could do a Zoom. We could get you through Zoom if you wanted to sit through the presentation, or I'm sure we could send the presentation on to the financial statements after the meeting. Go to Councillor Bendry.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
So far as we know, everyone else is available for that day.
Yep.
Just one question from me to the general manager. Is there any other business you think we'll need to deal with on that day?
On the 17th? Not that I'm aware of. And can take into consideration the council being caretaker period, and so there won't be anything significant. It'll only be for information purposes. That'll be all. So it should only be a fairly short meeting.
And as we know, we have to meet in person.
Yeah.
Those in favour?
Aye.
Item 12.3, the code of updates. Someone like to move that?
Thank you.
And the best, Councillor Hussey. Any questions to the General Manager on his report?
Just through you, Mr. Chairman, it's just an update that what we're starting to work through now too is about what policy do we put forward regarding vaccinations, and that policy, so we're working through that at the moment with the senior management team. Our staff at the moment, we haven't done a survey yet, but just talking to staff, we understand that it's probably around that 90% mark that staff have been vaccinated. Whereas the others who haven't been double vaccinated have got plans to get that second vaccination. I think we may only have one or two staff members that aren't vaccinated, so for their own reasons. But we're working through that policy now. So we're waiting for more guidance as well. What direction we can get from the Office of Local Government, and then also obviously what other councils are doing with regards to policy.
Okay, so you think we will have some staff who will not get vaccinated?
I think so. At this stage,
And there's therefore a decision to make as to whether they can come to work unvaccinated.
Yeah, and how well, and if they do, if we decide late or they can, obviously concerns of other staff members.
Yeah, well, that must be an issue which is affecting the whole of the industry.
Yeah. I think we're pretty lucky, as I said, the majority, as I understand, have been double vaccinated or have got plans to get double vaccinated, fully vaxxed. So working through that.
Probably the difference whether they're outdoor staff or indoor staff too.
That's right, with the adequate spacing and out in the open air and whatnot. So we're working through that. We've had those discussions in the senior management team council to come up with a policy that will obviously put the council for approval.
Has anything come through at all suggesting the Office of Local Government is going to make some suggestions to county councils, or
not at this stage, but nothing definitive. So yeah, I know every COVID webinar that I've been on through the Office of Local Government, they're always obviously encouraging people to get fully vaccinated and going right from there, I suppose, the Premier's briefings right through. So, and we've been putting that message out to our staff on a regular basis as well. No, I don't know if you want to make any comment, mate, regarding your...
We'll just go through our normal process. Things are changing very rapidly, as you can see with New South Wales, they're talking about a 70%, 80%, and then the 1st of December. But what we're doing within our outdoor stuff, we're just treating it as a general health and safety issue, where we'll do a work method statement or a swim just to cover us off to look at what the risks are and what controls we can put into place to keep those people working that do not wish to be vaccinated, so as we can keep a safe workplace for both the people that are working, their fellow workers, as well as themselves. So we're just treating it as a health and safety issue at the moment until we can get some further direction from local government or from county councils.
Mm. Yeah, and the other thing we've got to consider too, obviously, is any contractors, how we're going to manage contractors. Mm. Obviously, it's the change to the organisation, of working with the organisation as well. Working through that.
And the issues that have been highlighted for outdoor staff is for going to attend in properties such as hospitals, healthcare
services. Yeah, basically,
so, yeah. So one of the recommendations that we've put forward is to, if that person is on call, let's say we've got a guy that's on call that is not vaccinated, when they take that call, and if it's from a hospital or from a health service, even though we need to enter onto their property to look at the meter, one of the recommendations is to make that person that's making the call, calling for assistance, make them aware that that person is not fully vaccinated, and putting the owner's stamp onto that, the owner of the property, as far as how they would like to do it, knowing that we've got a backup plan, that we need to call somebody else in from another area that may be coming for that. But because of the changes, and we're not too sure what's happening on the 1st of December, if it's going to be relaxed an awful lot, we just kind of get through until the 1st of December.
Mm. It's hard because you're there, so we've got to have basically two people on call. Once you've got one vaccinated, and you've got somebody as a backup.
I know, the people on call, we've always got a person on call, say for Wiltshire, for Canberrashire, for Cobonshire and then Blaneyshire, and let's say the person may be in Cobon that is unvaccinated, then we may have to bring somebody up from, say, Granville, or someone down from Blaney, or vice versa, if it's in Blaney or at Granville. So there is methods that we can use, but it's just making those people aware of that person's not double vaccinated, because it's really their property. That we're entering into, even though we're not going into a building, it's still outdoors, so it's see how they're comfortable about how we can grow.
Just to the chair, is there any central meetings between now that wouldn't be between now and the election? Any meetings are central?
Mr. Chair, we've got one coming up in I think it's in a couple of weeks. But also, we've got a Water Utilities Alliance which we attend as well. Meeting through Centrox, so we can and through that's been really good, especially always during the drought, but also with COVID. There's been a lot of good feedback through there about what other councils are doing too regarding managing COVID implications with staff, trying to have a register there where we can help each other out if needed. So we can serve as that's with another, I think it might be in next week, or each of these alliance next week. So there should be more that will come out of that, but we can at least raise it to say, what do you guys?
Yeah, my take more less about what the other utilities are doing, more about OLG getting something definitive from them. It's just in a pretty short time period, because every council is going to be dealing with the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
And having some that official backup from the OLG would be more important than knowing what the other councils are doing. We really need to know what suggestions OLG is going to make as to our legal requirements, because that's where it gets into that little grey area of what we put down as well.
Mm. Yeah.
And so also maybe we can make recommendations through the Centroc then puts a bit of pressure on, not pressure, but contacts the OLG and ask for some sort of statement from the OLG or something like that going forward.
Yeah.
Just to add to the conversation, I mean, as an example, we had correspondence from a real estate agent who was insisted that anyone who approaches any properties that of our staff that are under their management to be vaccinated. So they've said that they've made that call.
Mm.
So we are getting individual supply. Telstra is one.
Yep.
They've sent a positive test today. So everyone's having to deal with it.
Mm.
The problem at the moment is that the state government does not really, has not really looked to make a ruling. I'd be very surprised if the LG would make a ruling, because the state government is not, it's basically said it's up to individual employers to manage it in terms of the reasonableness and the risk in their workplace. So it will be interesting to see what happens, but at the moment the indication is, because there's been talk of this, it's been coming for some time. It's not something that's just arisen, because the national plan has had it in there for some time. They haven't actually, either the level of government, either the state or the federal government, have been reluctant to enter into that, directed into that space. So that's why it's left a vacuum in that area, and there people have really got to, you've really got to make a judgment call yourself based on your circumstances and your assessment of the risk. But also, you've also got to think of the stakeholders that you're dealing with, because they're going to put requirements on us as well. So it is a very, very complex issue.
Mm. Do we know whether it's legitimate for us to have a condition of employment that you are fully vaccinated?
Well,
I'm not saying we would do that, but well, that's obviously...
When those people were employed, there was no requirement, obviously, but... I know with sewage workers, for instance, there is a requirement to have of employment to have hepatitis vaccinations and so on. That's been for water and sewage utilities, that's been a requirement for years and years, as long as I can remember, from the WHS point of view. Hasn't been such a big thing in the water industry because of the nature of the industry. So really it comes down to basically what people have said is whether it's reasonable to whatever decision makes, whether it's something to be reasonable based on your assessment of the risk in your particular industry. There hasn't even been, to my knowledge, a guideline to say that authorised workers are required to be double. That's what they consider to be authorised workers. So there's no actual requirement out there that actually says that. So we basically, there's a bit of a vacuum in this space at the moment, and there's been a reluctance politically to really enter that. They've really pushed that down to the individual employer level and said, well, you manage it and you deploy it. And that's basically what the conundrum we've got at the moment.
Because through you, Mr. Chair, I know with the Department of Education, I think it's also New South Wales Police, they're mandated that they've got to, by a certain time, have a double back. We just, as Councillor Beth said, we just need that guidance. This is what we need to do, because reasons. Or if that swept up to us, we make the call to say that
certainly
the risk, we make that call.
Certainly in issues like aged care and health and everything, it's been made mandatory in those. And also it's been places like Woolworths and Coles, the major retailers that have got a lot of people that are in face-to-face contact with the public, they're actually probably in as well up there as this.
And for us, there could be a difference between indoor staff and outdoor staff as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Just ask a quick question through Mr. Chairman of the team. We need some sign waiver or agreement with an unvaxxed staff member that we're going to disclose their public health information to a third party. So if the person does ring up, just looking, I've got a water leak, we're only allowing as Pete says, certain real estate agents trying to vaccinate staff on.
The
on-call person, he's not vaxxed, that's person A, the 1% of the staff is not.
Yeah.
We say, no, if the bloke on call wants to bring someone else, we're breaching their privacy or disclosing their health information, so would we have to get some agreement?
I think so.
And that's where you put the pressure on the ALG to say, look, we need legal gurus say about this.
Yeah. I think that would be the case. And then you've got the issue with the unions, I suppose. You've got to deal with the unions with that privacy issue, that's something we would have.
Because there'd be that one member of staff that would turn up and say, "Well, you breached my privacy and told everyone all this stuff."
And I had a similar situation just recently when one of our staff members tested. Class as a close contact for a case in Orange 3 months ago, I advised staff that we did have one of our staff members, but obviously for privacy reasons, I did not disclose that person's name. But although being a small organisation, they work it around. But I totally respect people's privacy and for those reasons, but it would come back to people obviously don't want their.
What's a good sign of grounds? So what we told because you signed this, so we were free to disclose it part of the health record. Okay, well,
so we'll work through that and we'll come back to council obviously with a policy.
Yeah, so yeah, we need a policy, particularly if the policy might be imposing a condition that people get vaccinated.
Yeah.
And if not, how we manage unvaccinated people, the risk of contamination that are more likely to pass on COVID. We'll watch this space. Those in favour?
All right.
Aye. Thank you. Item 12.4, demand management report. This is simply adopting the two plans, which we would have adopted at the August meeting had we had an August meeting. Same report as went up to the council August meeting. So I'd like to move that. Councillor Newstead, Councillor Benford, thank you. Those in favour?
Aye.
Carried.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, just a quick one. With that policy now that's been adopted, we're developing a newsletter for our to go with our next set of accounts, and we're going to emphasise in there about what consumers can do, noting that late rollers is 103% at the moment, and within the demand management policy plan, you may remember, or the drought management plan, that we said that late rollers is at 90% of recovery. That people can wash down hard surfaces. So we're going to remind customers of that allowance now. Not only would it obviously please the customers, because we've had a few inquiries previously about washing down hard surfaces, but just to also make use of that water that we have got available. As a spring clean.
Good. Good. A sale on water there. Moving on to item 12.5, the delivery program progress report, another item which was to be dealt with in the August meeting, which was cancelled. Someone like to move that?
Yes.
Councillor Henry, Councillor Best, thank you. So not only is there the report, but there's the progress against the delivery plan. Anyone have any questions in relation to the report or the attachment?
Just whether or not, through the pumped hydro scheme, whether that's something we should be then incorporating in our documents at all?
Yes, we can put that in, especially coming up to the next term of council that will be factored in for our delivery program. And then maybe the bottom paragraph of my report, I've already planned with to schedule a workshop, like an hour workshop with the staff on the 9th of December, and then also for the after the first meeting of the new council, an IPNR councillor workshop, noting we're going to have a fairly short time frame between now and then the 30th of June to get our IPNR documents ready for adoption. So we've got engaged Karen Leaf, who's got a lot of experience. She was working for the Office of Local Government for a number of years, and now she's does purely consulting on IPNR. So we had a workshop earlier this year with senior management and managers, as well as with Golden Fields Water with Karen, with facilitator. She facilitated an IPNR workshop, was very worthwhile. So, but that'd be good to have that early on with the potentially new council, but just and a refresher for the existing councils as well, especially around the county council requirements. Maybe you'd be able to speak with the GP councils, but it just emphasises the requirements of the county council because they are slightly different.
Do county councils have to produce an end of term report like GP councils do?
No, we don't, but I'm planning on doing an end of year report without the full requirements of the general purpose council. So I'll put that's another report that I can put to the meeting on the 17th, listing our achievements, especially, I think it's good to reflect, especially those councils who are not going to stand again, and just to reflect on the achievements that we have made over that period and the progress that we've made. So I'll put it, yeah, it'll be an end of year report for us. It's not mandated, but I think it's good
progress. Yeah. Okay, just one question that caught my eye going through the delivery program progress. Item 2.1, the customer service group activities, the service levels, established service levels and monitoring report of measure service level reviews completed and see progress. This was came up when we were talking about the MOU with Water Infrastructure New South Wales. We did a bit of work on those there. Is there something more formal going to happen there, or is this something we should roll up to the next council?
With this, I'm not sure to add to this, but we have obviously the service levels within our strategic business plan, but looking more closely at our service levels for customer service in the corporate area as well. I don't think we've actually formalised those, so that's why we raised those in the IP delivery program. So that's something that we will be looking at doing.
Yeah, I suspect that's going to become more important for organisations like ours, so very clear service level commitments.
Yeah.
And we touched on some of the possible areas where we should have commitments, you know, what our commitment to our customers is, response times and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And as I said, we did a bit of that because we really had to. Water Infrastructure were inviting people on designing our new dam to meet our customers' requirements. That's something which I think ought to be elevated in terms of priority when we get to when the next council gets to looking at a delivery program.
Yeah, for reviews, Jim. The other thing is when we do have asset management plan, and that will be revisited with the next round of IP and our service levels are incorporated in there as well. But to probably articulate them more succinctly, I would really need to look at them.
Yeah.
Rather than strictly in terms of the performance of the assets as such.
Yeah. I think it'd be very nice in terms of customer relationship to be able to say, this is our commitment to you, basically, something like that.
And with that, that's a refresher for the staff as well, and you've
been
further involved, and that ownership piece with delivering that customer service. So,
Okay, that was all I had. Anyone else, any questions on the various projects there? Okay, put that, those in favour. We move to item 12.6, the sub-regional town water supply strategy. The report is another report which would have been dealt with at the August meeting had we had it, in the same terms as the August Christmas paper. Would someone like to move that? Councillor Durkin, seconded Councillor Newstead.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I just want to add to that. The draft MOU is being developed, and we'll, between now and before Council can show, and in the next couple of weeks, organise a Zoom workshop or online workshop to go through that with the councillors to see if they've got any issues with that MOU, or we'll go through that MOU. Before.
This is an MOU between CEO and Bond and I.
That's right, yes. Yep. So there's a draft one that was sent through email, I think, the other day. So each councillor are going to go through that MOU, come together and then finalise that MOU. But we'll look at organising that on our side of net face-to-face. So we'll look at having a Zoom workshop for that, but mainly go for an hour or two, depending on the issues that are raised, but we'll send it out and see well before and see how to look at them. before the workshop and then go through that.
That's
right, yeah. Chris Devon and input from the councils initially. So, and I think it was based on some of the draft MOU was based on previous MOU that we've had with Water New South Wales with the pipeline project. So, we'll put that out to councils for review and then we'll have a short workshop to go through any issues there that may arise.
Okay, and how are we going on the brief to the consultants to actually do the work? We need a consultant brief to go to DPRE to get the money to do the work. Yeah,
as I understand, it's well on its way. I think it's going to be finalised right now.
We've had two passes through the grant now. So
everyone's had their opportunity. Mm-hmm. Any
issues
or
changes.
It seems to be taking a long time. I remember when this first came up, it was put to the JO back in May, I think.
Yep.
And Gabon, who were desperately keen to get this underway, wanted to deal with it straight away.
Yeah.
We're now 5 months later.
Yeah.
We haven't even got the draft. Consultant brief, I would have thought Gabon would have been really pushing
to get it through. The other thing that's probably held up the process is we're dealing with DPIE water under the Safe and Secure program there too, so they had to get the approval through them for the process as well. So I think it's probably been a slight delay there that has held it up. And once again, with coming out of drought, the pressure's probably has come up as well. But in saying that, this is one of the pushes to renew the infrastructure that's aging out there. But I know they are keen to.
I'm just surprised it's been so long.
Yeah.
I think the workshop we had in lieu of the August council meeting, I think I suggested that one of the selection criteria for the successful tenderer was an ability to get on with it straight away. Because I know on my premise, for example, we've got so much to work on.
Yeah.
But if you look at the Carrera project, for example, that seems to have taken a long while because they've got other things to do.
Mm. Yeah.
This is really important, and selecting someone who may be the best or close to the best, but I've got the best time.
Okay.
Any more questions? No. Those in favour? Thank you, Gary. Item 12.7, the Hokkaido Recoverable Grants Program. Again, something we were going to consider at the August meeting. Someone like to move that? So that's the best, Councillor Durden. I've got one suggestion actually on the terms of the recommendation. Paragraph 2 starts off endorse and support the SMT in submitting the application. I think that's what we were going to do at the August meeting, because we haven't done it, but what we're doing now is ratifying.
Yeah.
So I think they should say ratify the senior manager, etc.
Yeah.
I wonder if I could ask Noel, can you give us an update on how this is all going? But I think we've passed the first hurdle.
Yes, we submitted our application for grant funding. There's three levels that it must go through. We passed the first level to say yes. They accept that this is a feasible, it meets the criteria for the feasibility. There's another two stages of that there to go through. So, and that will be done internally. So it was just acknowledging that, yes, we are going to progress through to the next two items that they need to, the DPIE or whoever is running the program will be passing through. We don't have any further inquiries. I don't think I've had any questions to come back to us. They're just working through the rest of them. I'm sure there'll be questions coming through to us.
Okay, so let's hope we move through the next stages as well. Anyway, this recommendation is that we approve funding of $75,000, 50% contribution to the cost of this.
Oh, just a question to the director. I just don't understand if you could just explain to me the funding arrangement. I'm just trying to find how to get head around how it works, that's all. Can you just run that through, can you know, or not?
We came up with a funding of around the value of it to progress through to the next stage. So the strategic business case, if I can put it in that case, we needed to get an application into the recognise that this project was valid under the rules of the green energy or whatever it was called, recoverable grants, which was the first tick in the box. So we were looking at the next stage because we did believe we would get through to that stage, and being able to partner with somebody to do this work, such as the body that was assisting us with this application. We tried to work out what would be a funding stream to get us through to that strategic case and give us a good basis to support if this funding came through for us, if it were applicable for that funding. And that's where that $75,000 came from.
Yeah, I know, but so they support us with $75,000, we put in $75,000, and then at some stage, when they talk about the financial close, then that comes back out of the if it goes further, just understand, like if we're talking about, this is going to be lots of $1 million. I'm just trying to understand how that all works, that's all.
Yeah, through you, Mr. Chairman, and answer the Councillor Best, the way I understand it, it's a recoverable grant, so if we proceed to the next stage or to construction, we will have to pay that other $75,000 back that they've granted us. However, it's my understanding that the project will be, that obviously at that stage it will be agreed that the project will be funded in whatever way that is, either is it by the department or if there's an investor that comes in to fund that project. That is my understanding of the program.
It is a bit wishy-washy.
And
again, it was the value of what can we do after going through the application process, what are the next stages that we could foresee, and that's where we come up with that $150,000. And that was going to be our contribution to get to that next stage. So if we do go forward, and then the decision would have to be made by council, whether we go alone, whether we go with somebody else, whether Central wants to come in. I just don't know that it's just a pipeline dream. That's all of having the ability to do this. And
it'll be wonderful. We got it. I'm just looking at the future of how they come. This is we've got a budget of $75,000 for it, and then will they come back with another stage where we've got to put more money in? At what point do we get to a point where we can say, okay, we've invested so much in it, is there a guaranteed return on it or not? You know, that's all I'm looking at. Is it, like I said, it could be an 8-year project sort of thing. So at what point do we know we're up to a level where we've spent enough that we're sort of we never going to be guaranteed it, I understand it, but I'm just there.
So it's feasible, but of course it would never be stacked up, so it's not something that CTW can support on their own, because the stages that we're looking at is the dam, a new dam downstream, of course, to be able to meet those demands. A lower dam reservoir on the Kerning Creek side would also be needed, so as we can store that and pump that back up and through. But it just ticked off all those boxes to give us the opportunity into there.
My understanding of all this is that $150,000 is just for a feasibility study. We contribute half the cost of that. That goes back to the government if we get through these next stages. And if it looks all feasible, they'll say, well, yes, let's get serious about this to the case, the strategic business case, and the final business case, which will work. That'll cost a lot of money itself anyway, millions, and that will include working out the cost of doing our project, which could be 50 million, and that will all be funded through this program on the basis that if it gets to the stage where it's all viable and it's financed, then that's financial close and everyone commits to actually do it.
Mm.
At that stage, the money that's put into the project, let's say it's 50 million, it's in fact got to be 55 million because there's 5 million that's got to come back to the government who funded all the costs to get to the stage where it's going, not just this 150,000.
Mm. Okay.
Just a question through the Institute. Obviously, our priority is to supply water. I just want to know this, obviously, the study's going to take, say, 3 to 4 years or whatever, and then there's another 3 to 4 years to put it all together and build it. So we're looking, you know, 8 years down the track. Is that going to put Lake Rowland's augmentation on hold because it's all linked together for 8 years? Because feasibly, we get another drought between now and then. So I'm just worried about the time frame. And is it all going to get put on hold until they say, yes, we can go ahead with it? Is Lake Rowland's going to get put on hold? That's all I know.
3 years. I'll go first, and then Chloe can either back me up or disagree. my view is that this is only going to strengthen the Lake Rowland's opportunity, the augmentation there. And as we've said all along, is that this is only going to increase that opportunity for increased water security, as well as the renewable energy space as well, to try and meet those targets that we're setting and the state is setting in the nation. So I think it's only going to support that water security piece, which is our priority and has been for well over 20 years and beyond that. So I think it's only going to strengthen that case. It's an opportunity to even push that water security piece forward and think about it holistically rather than just a smaller part of Lake Rowland, but to say, okay, if we take a wider look at this or a big picture approach.
It's fantastic what I've done. This is the best thing I've heard for a long time. But if they say we're going to go ahead and do this, are we not able to do Lake Rowland's until it's all finalised? Can we go and augmentate Lake Rowland now? Or have we got to wait until we can put all the pipes and all that other infrastructure in with it? Is that on hold? Or can we just, you know, is that feasible that we can do Lake Rowland's in the short term and then add the hydro to it later? Or is it all going to be bundled into one and we wait 8 years, that's all we're asking.
That would depend on the study we're doing with the Globular Water Security Project, which is, we're pushing this as obviously an option under that study, which they've got time frames of mid next year, if you know, or to get that study done. So we've put this forward to Water Infrastructure New South Wales, saying this is what we've applied for, and we have got their support. They haven't raised any objections to us putting in for this application, but we're just highlighting as a further option to strengthen our case for this option to be looked at, as in the augmentation of Lake Rowland or the larger downstream. So we'll know that once that study, the Globular Water Security Project, is completed, and that's scheduled at this stage, I think it's here mid next year to do that. And they know that water security obviously is a high priority, is something that needs to be dealt with. How did you want to?
So we've been very open with Water Infrastructure in New South Wales because if we go back a little bit in history, we were driving the Lake Rowland's augmentation. It was stalled for up to, I think, 33 weeks or whatever. Yeah, we know decisions being made. For us to move that through, we worked in with a relationship within Water Infrastructure New South Wales to get that augmentation project going through. Now, the option that we put forward that came out of the strategic business case, which is where we were up to, was to raise the dam wall by 2.2 metres. Water Infrastructure New South Wales has now merge our project with the pipeline between Carcourt Dam and Lake Rollins. So we're looking at the feasibility between the, a combined feasibility of those two projects, raising the dam well 2.2, pipeline in, plus looking at all other options. Now the other options, of course, would be new dams downstream, of which one could be the new dam 2.2. 5 kilometres downstream of Lake Rollins. What we saw with the pump hydro would be the need for that new dam downstream 2.5 kilometres to give us that extra storage capacity to be able to move water backwards and forwards rather than trying to drain it out of Lake Rollins with the augmented. So we, if you look at that, we had about 8 gig of water when it was completely full. We would be transferring 2 gig of water. So we would be dropping 25% of that water each time, every day, and then pumping it back up or when we could pump it up. So it's a staged approach that we believe is a good working relationship with Water Infrastructure in New South Wales to put pressure on our downstream dam, building that new dam downstream, that will give us that extra capacity of water to provide for drought, as well as now being enhanced with the energy market. So the way that we see it is complementing it. So each time we do a feasibility study or Water Infrastructure New South Wales, I think they actually raised more money, didn't they, from the state government, to cover off on things like environmental impact studies, do all that background work. So all that work we'll be doing for Lake Rollins augmentation actually will enhance the hydro. This is part of the areas that the hydro will do too. So the projects work hand in hand. We're hoping that the pumped hydro continues to move forward and puts more pressure to build our dam downstream of Lake Rollins, not another dam down Nettles, Gap or Cranky Rock and things like that. So we're trying to leave all the best parts of our Lake Rollins there.
Yeah, okay. So if that does go ahead, then Lake Rollins is just over where it is?
Again, it's an option, and that's what we're working with. So it's two stages. We still haven't got to the options that are on the table with Water Infrastructure in New South Wales about the augmentation of Lake Rollins. So again, our feasibility study stacked up about raising 2.2. All that information's been passed over to Water Infrastructure in New South Wales. They may accept that, or they may say it's a combined project, which is what they're doing. It's not two projects, which as it was before. Water New South Wales looked after the Carcourt Dam pipeline to Lake Rollins, and CTW looked after raising the augmentation of Lake Rollins. That project now has come under Water Infrastructure New South Wales as one project.
Okay, so you've answered my question by saying yes, it will be 3 years before we know, and another 4 years before it builds. So it'll be 8 years before we get any more water.
Not necessarily. If they talk about building a new dam downstream of Lake Rollins, if that comes out as the preferred option of Water New South Wales for the pipeline and Lake Rollins augmentation project, then that's ticking the box and that's the way that it will be moved forward on.
Okay, so that'll be up here.
Yes.
Sooner than later.
Right. Yes. And the flow on effect of that, if they make that decision, will be that enhances the pump hydro system for the next stage, because that would mean building new pondage down below that new dam.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Craig, I would answer the question. The risk to our augmentation of Lake Rollins, the 2.2 raising the dam wall option, which we've been pushing for, the risk to the timing of that, caused by this pumped hydro option, is that it makes the big dam downstream potentially more viable.
Yes.
But if you consider energy efficiency and net zero emissions as a relevant factor in assessing viability, and if it turns out that this turns their head about the viability of the big new dam, but the big new dam is the best solution only if it's connected with the hydro, then there's a risk that they'll say let's work this hydro thing up, and if that really looks good, that makes the big new dam look good, so that's the best water security option as well.
So it won't happen for 8 years, then.
So I think there's a risk that this might turn their heads about whether the big new dam is a better alternative than the 2.2 wall raising. And that's where the risk comes in. It'd be nice to disassociate the two, but we had a meeting yesterday with the DPI water, a team that looking at the Lachlan Regional Water Strategy, and I raised this very question about, in assessing the options of the dam wall raising and the big new dam, was one of the things that might consider in connection with the big new dam, the fact that not only might improve water security, but it could also be a viable alternative for energy efficiency as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was sort of, so they don't quite know, but yeah.
So they'll say that big new dam and the high grade, the studies will take 2 or 3 years. So nothing's gonna happen for 2 or 3 years. And then if they decide to go with the big dam, it's gonna take 4 years to build. So it's gonna be 8 years before we get extra water, basically.
Well,
that's what I was saying anyway.
If I can continue on with that, we've got to fill the new dam.
Mm.
So it's not a matter of building the new dam, and I take your point about 8 years, but we've got lots of rain coming through now, which we knew that's what drought-breaking rain does.
Yeah.
We haven't had the ability to capture it, and we drove as hard as we could to get the dam wall raised, because that was the ability to do that in the shortest time frame during the drought period, to have the ability to capture that extra water. We haven't been able to do that. So I take your point about how long it's going to take, but in being realistic about it, if we look back on our climate range that we've had, even building a new dam downstream, we still got to fill it, and that is the biggest unknown as far as our risk of how we're going to get through the next drought for CTW.
I understand that,
but
still seems to me it's going to be unsettling before the water, rather than just going to do an augmentation option. I understand this project is brilliant, but it's unbelievable. But what can happen in 8 years? Like a new government, and they might just pull the rug out. That's all I'm prepared for.
Look, our diligence, if you like, due diligence in trying to make sure that we do have more water for the next drought. Yeah, things like our pump at Woodstock there, that's going to end since we're talking about that pipeline of parts and faults. That's going to know what happened there. We're adding little things to it. The problem with surface water, it's relying on the weather, and we need that rainfall. That is the biggest downfall of having surface water as a catchment area, and that's where the climate variation leaves us at risk. Okay.
Do you think the lower dam that we're talking about, big capacities or just a smaller storage one?
Only the colour of 2 gigalitres. So if you look at the dam that we have at Lake Rollins, it's a 20 metre dam wall. It's maximum at the highest part of that dam. So if we go downstream and looking at the capacity that we need to suck water back up, recover that to 1.5 gigs, so we'd be looking at 2 gigalitres of water down there. We're looking at about a 10 metre. In the area that we can see in survey work, we can see that we can build up to a 10 metre wall across and hold that amount of water back before the bridge there at Cooney Creek.
So it's only going to hold 2 gigalitres, you think?
Correct. And it'll be pumped back out. So it's really, it's got the ability to store up to 2 gigalitres.
Yeah.
But that's only when only when it's required to operate the hydro system.
Mm-hmm. So otherwise,
we've got to get the water back up, so it's really only holding, half a gig or something like that.
Yeah. It's one of those things, isn't it? Because you'd like to see it hold more, because then in the time when we do have drought now, Lake Rollins is a low alert, we don't want to be releasing water down there. And it'd be nice if we could pump the water back up from another source and then But that'll all come out for a physical study in the water cover, I think.
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to acknowledge the efforts that Noel and we've charged for as a consultancy to put that application together in such a short period of time. And we did, luckily there was an extension with that time as well. It was only a 2-week extension, and I just want to acknowledge the efforts.
Okay, it's a good discussion. Good discussion, just focusing on the risks to CDW of not getting what my objective is, it's a bit more still water. And it's a good way to analyse the connection between this pumped hydro and our main objective of more still water. Okay, those in favour?
Aye.
Carried. 12.8, council resolutions update. The resolutions up to our last meeting in June. So I'd like to move that. Councillor Eustead, seconded Councillor Begrin, thank you. Any questions in relation to those only 5 outstanding resolutions? Just have to ask a question for the first one, the agreement with Orange. Should we better to suggest that let's just put that on hold until we do the sub-regional town water strategy, which is going to talk about shifting water around the region?
We did think about that, Mr. Chairman, but we thought, well, our agreement with Orange with the pipeline is, because Orange have already got an agreement with Gabon, with their pipeline to Molong, and so we believe that we should still have our agreement with Orange and treat that separately to the... It'll be incorporated in the regional town water strategy, but still have that agreement directly with Orange with the use of that pipeline. Noel, correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand that, well, the discussions we've had with Orange recently is that there's going to be a workshop organised with them, or a meeting organised with Orange water staff and the executive to go through the agreement. It's been with their legal team for quite a period of time now, and just go through any issues they've got there, but I understand that's going to happen very, very shortly. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's an item on our agenda for the carrot to CTW it's one of our agenda items. We're asking how we're going with that, so it's in Orange's hand. They've gone through their legal team. They've now said, yep, we're happy to move it forward. So we're asking now for when they can come back with their comments. But it's an agenda item that it's raised every month, and we're just waiting on Orange to come back to provide that information to us as we can move forward. So it's very close. They haven't raised any objections to any part of it. I asked those questions, but it's just a matter of sitting there together and ratifying them.
Okay, any other questions? If not, put that those in favour.
Aye.
Thank you. 12.9, uncompleted works. Revotes. Again, this is something we would have dealt with in August had we had a meeting. Anything you want to say about this, Peter? It's all pretty self-explanatory.
Through Mr. Chairman, yeah, this is works that we've got in progress that we hadn't completed at 30th of June 2021. Basically, most of it's in the capital area and those projects are listed there. The 2 big projects, of course, for completion is the 12-week reservoir at Carcoal Water Filtration Plant and the Woodstock Emergency Pump Station. They're grant funded. So basically, that's just the effect of this is basically bringing these projects into the current budget. In saying that, it's a pretty full capital program we've got for this year, so it's going to be pretty full on to work through. So it's going to be a pretty busy year. But we do have those major projects to finish. The weather hasn't helped us. We had a period where weather, as everyone's known, and then we had the COVID situation, and that slowed down, particularly the Garkle Reservoir project. So we had a few factors sort of working against us, but basically that's the projects listed there. That was existing works. Was much pretty straightforward there in terms of what they are. I don't think there's any surprises there for anyone, but I'm certainly happy, or the senior management team certainly happy to address any items if anyone's got any questions on them. So basically, hopefully we'll be able to knock quite a few of these off by the end of next year, hopefully.
Mm.
So we're 2.9 million budgeted last year to be spent, which we didn't spend, and we're rebating it for this year. Will we be able to spend it all this year?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, I'll get Noel to add, but the latest advice that Noel's given me with the reservoir is that the reservoir is projected now to be finished in July of 2022, so we have had some delays, as I indicated. So hopefully, yes, we'll be able to get these ones across the line, particularly the major ones. They are grant funded, and there are grant conditions that we have to comply with, and that's part of the Carrow to Carrow CCW project that Noel was referring to earlier. So there's meetings on these projects on a regular basis. So hopefully, yes, we'll be able to get them pretty close by the end of this year. I don't know if you want to add anything to that, Noel, in terms of the status of those particular projects? Or?
Yeah, we've pretty well broken the backs of those projects. It's just a matter of now being able to implement them because of COVID and weather conditions that you've knocked us around a little bit. But the rest of everything, the unknowns, if I can say, have now been known, and we can work our way through. So the majority of the work that's required from internal with CTW now is really on these other smaller projects, and getting the time frame to do those projects is just as important, of course, as far as doing the other major projects too. So it'll be a busy 9 months.
Hmm. Anyway, so the question from these councillors is, in revaluing this money for the current year, are we going to spend it this year? And the answer is, yes. Best we know, yes, we will.
And Mr. Chairman, that is definitely our aim if the council gives us approval to spend money for major projects, then certainly we intend to spend them as quickly as we can.
Good.
So up to date, we don't need any extensions on any of those grant applications, or all?
Through the chair, we have that week, our monthly meeting, and part of that is with the grant funding agencies. So we've made them aware each month, and there's no objections raised by them that could affect the outcome of not continuing on with the funding stream as it stands.
Yeah. Okay, any more questions? Those in favour? Okay, 12.10. Investment report. I think we've got two here. We've got one for end of July, one for end of August, and I suppose that's because we're bound to do a monthly. Is that right?
Well, I thought, Mr. Chairman, it'd be an advantage to actually see that, keep those two reports and see them, just see how the way we're sort of managing the portfolio. I thought it was a good opportunity for councillors to sort of look at that. So I left the July report in there. So it hasn't been submitted to council. We did discuss it last month, but as we intend to basically put in there. The market, as councillors would know from your constituent councils, the investments market is very, very difficult to try and get anything like a sort of a reasonable return. So basically, one of the strategies that we did, and I've discussed this previously, is we've actually got the on-call investment with Macquarie Bank, which is at quite a good rate, 0.35%, which is quite a good rate in the current market. So that's allowed us to basically push out our maturity periods for our investments. We were working in the 6 to 9 month range, we're trying to push out now to about 12, which allows us to pick up another 5 or 6 basis points, or 0.05 or 0.06 of a percent. Every dollar adds up at the end of the day to try and get the best return. So basically, if we look at the July one, which we're looking at now, we were holding a fair bit in our general account and our overnight saving with the Commonwealth Bank, which is paying 0.01%. And our general account now doesn't pay any interest at all, our general operational account. So when we come to the next report, we can see how we've reduced those holdings in the Commonwealth Bank. We've taken out a couple of new term deposits. We've been assisted by the fact that our September accounts have been coming in as well. So we've got a little bit more cash. We'll see that in the next report. But basically, we're extending the maturities of our term deposits to try and operate on the higher end of the curve, if you like, to try and give that a little bit of an extra return. It's at the margin, but if you're talking about 5 or 6 basis points and you're talking about based on 0.3, that's another 20% return, albeit from a very low level, and every sort of bit helps.
Okay, thanks, Ben. I'll ask, formalise this, ask someone to, on 12.10, to move that recommendation. Councillor Best, Councillor Newstead, thank you. Those in favour? Carried. Then we move on to the next one, which is the August. September, yes. Report?
Yeah, for you, Mr. Chairman.
I'll just get someone to move this one. Councillor Durkin, Councillor Newstead, thank you. And I think as you flagged a minute ago, Peter, we've got an extra million or so in the bank because September is when that's prepaid.
Yes, through you, Mr. Chairman, we've got that, and also what we've done is that we've taken out a few extra term deposits there. Some of them with the higher rated institutions, we're generally looking at about 0.4%. Our maturities when term deposit rolls, we're finding that we're down 20 or 30 basis points when we're rolling. So there's plenty of liquidity in the banking system, and that comes back to governments have been pumping a lot of money into economies, certainly since the GFC, they've been pumping a lot of liquidity, so the system's got a huge amount of liquidity in there, and the money's trying to find a home. So basically, that means that the interest rate returns have been quite low. So basically, we reduced our holdings in the Commonwealth Bank accounts there quite significantly, and we've taken out a couple of new term deposits. We did get one with AMP. They had a short-term liquidity issue, and they were making a very special offer, 0.8%, which in the current market was probably around 30 to 35 points better than what we could get anywhere else. So we took an additional investment with AMP, as long as staying within the parameters within our policy at the moment. So basically, we're trying to actively manage it as much as we can, pushing the terms out to try and get that little bit of extra return. Obviously, if you wanted to go out 5 years, which we really, given the nature of with a lot of projects, as we've discussed in planning here, we certainly can't go out to that part of the curve. Some of the larger general purpose councils can operate on a really long term part of the curve, and those rates are actually starting to come up a little bit because there's a concern about inflation, and I did note, make a note in there about, in the report about some central banks are now starting to raise rates, which is quite, over the last 4 or 5 years, that's, well, certainly 2 or 3 years, it's been very, very strange, very abnormal that any sort of central bank has tried to increase interest rates. But we've seen New Zealand, Norway and South Korea do that. They're not major economies, but they are significant that those central banks are now starting to wind up their interest rates. The Reserve Bank here in Australia basically said they're going to keep them on hold until 2024, but there's now some concern about inflation, particularly with some of the commodities. Petrol prices is a good example. There's a fair bit of, we've seen fairly significant increase in petrol prices of late. And certain things like oil, gas, coal, even the cereal markets for some of the farm cereals now, Dubai food is quite expensive now on the world market. So we could be maybe entering an era where we see inflation come back up again to around 3% or a little bit over. So we'll be operating in a very different environment than what we have the last couple of years. So that's going to put a lot of pressure on the Reserve Bank of Australia to maybe make a call a little bit earlier than 2024. But we'll wait and see. But people are starting to price in at the longer end, certainly increases in interest rates. Mm. The downside for CTW is obviously when we need to borrow money, and we'll come to that with a report about borrowing shortly, but when we come to do that, obviously the borrowing rates will be higher to us because of that. So that sort of swings and roundabouts, but that's basically where it's going.
Thank you, Peter. Those in favour? Aye. Carried. And that's a good segue into the borrowing, item 12, financial matters loan funding update. And this is a report that would have gone to the August meeting, report from Peter on our prospective borrowings. Someone else heard that? That's on this, thank you. Executive Councillor Newstead, I think it was, thank you. Well, of course, the Lake Rollins augmentation funding was $7.5 million over a couple of years. Who knows quite where that's going to end up?
Through you, Mr. Chairman, that's, and Councillor Grimmick spoke nearly earlier in terms of the timing of that project, and that's something in your next round of IPNR documents and planning documents, particularly long-term financial planning, that we're going to have to try and actually look at the timing of that again and see when we will. See when we will require that funding and also any grant funding for that project. It's very difficult at the moment. There's a lot of work to be done still in terms of the scope of the project and what's the selected option, and that will substantially impact on how we do our long-term financial plan going forward. We will certainly in the next round of IPNR have to go through and make some assumptions on that in terms of when we believe that that will occur with the best information we have at the time. But as Councillor Brandrick's indicated, it's a moving feast to a degree. So we've just got to keep work with it and making assumptions based on the best information we have and work with the stakeholders and try and push it as hard as we can. One of the keys is going to be the funding co-contribution with the Global Water Project in terms of the lake role and side, but in terms of what New South Wales would indicate is the co-contribution they would expect us to make. Obviously, if it's a large downstream, that's certainly something that's beyond our capacity to become involved in. But there's a lot of walls up in the air here, and at some point we've got to sit down and try and put them into a document that we can say that that's the way we're going to move forward. So we've got a bit of work to do there. Just with the borrowings, I'd say we're coming up to a fairly historic time. On the 31st of March 2022, which will be the first time in 20 years that CCW has been debt-free. That money was borrowed back in, I think, late 2001 for the Corniella scheme and for the Kākau water filtration plant. So come March, the final payment will be debt-free for the first time in 20 years, which will free up a little bit of liquidity for us that we can put into our reserves. That we can set aside for some of the major projects we've got planned, particularly the Lake Rollins project and certainly the planning water treatment plant project as well. So that's basically what I say to Councillor Best, because I apologise, because he'd been asking for this report for many, many months, and I finally got around to presenting it to in there. Certainly, if you've got any questions about it, I'm quite happy to take them.
Any questions? Thanks for the report, Peter, and something we need to keep an eye on over the next little while, or the next council room, anyway. Those in favour?
Aye.
Gary, thank you, 12-13. It's again something we were scheduled to do in August, but with the good grace of our auditors, they got on with the audit anyway. But we now need to catch up. Does someone like to move those 8 recommendations? Councillor Benbrick, seconded Councillor Newstead. Any questions about this one? I think we've been through these accounts at the last workshop.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a copy of the accounts here if anyone wants to see them. Just as an update, the auditors have contacted me and said basically they've just about completed their audit. Once they get the certificates and representation letters from senior management, we should be pretty well to go. So
that's excellent.
Very well placed there. I'd like to just thank all the staff for their contribution and John Stewart with his experience has been invaluable to get to this point. So I thank them.
That's good. Thank John from the council, yes. And thank you and Gav and those who have been involved in putting these accounts together under the difficult circumstances.
Yes, Chairman, I'd also like to acknowledge, obviously, Peter, that his efforts in coordinating and getting the statements done. I know there's always a lot of to-ing and fro-ing as well, even though once the statements are drafted, there's a lot of work that goes in behind those during the audit and after the audit. So acknowledge Peter and his staff in their efforts for doing that, and also once again, John Stewart.
Thank you. Those in favour? Thank you. 12-14, minutes of the last audit committee meeting back in June. There has been a committee meeting since then, but we don't have the minutes of that yet. First, I'd like to move that one. Councillor Newstead, secondly, Councillor Durkin, thank you. Any questions? If not, I'll put that. Those in favour?
Aye.
12-15, water security. Report on various drought projects that are underway. That's all I can do that one. Councillor Newstead, check it out. Councillor Durkin again, thank you. Any questions of the director in relation to this?
With the Woodstock pump station, I just can't remember. So we had to do a different organisation with it or not, with our agreement with. Is that in new place, or it was just going to be going back with on the old agreement we had with Gara over the Woodstock pump?
No, we drafted up a new agreement as well for that. It's in its final movements.
That's good.
Yeah, take
the one. No, not quite as long.
This one's in our hands.
Yeah.
It's just updating our network to include where the boundaries are of who's responsible.
That's right.
Without disadvantage, if you like, that we've got an asset sitting inside Cowra in that Woodstock area. So we're just trying to update all the diagrams. And again, COVID has been a bit of a bug, of course. It'd be nice to sit face to face with the person that's doing that, but we'd have to get help from outside. So now that the borders are open and the LGA borders are open, hopefully we can. It's half an hour of work, yeah, to get that appointment.
It'd be nice to have it when the project's finished, have it all completed instead of sort of having the actual agreement sort of 2 years later or something. Sneaky.
What is yet to be done for the Woodstock pump station? Is that landscaping back into it?
Yes, the weather as well is knocked us over with that. So we prioritise to try and make sure that access road at the reservoir is completed, because we were pushing to get the geotechs in there to do that 40-metre drill into the centre so as we can get the pricing fixed for the foundation work. So we've been concentrating on that, but weather has been knocking that around. So once that's completed, we can get over the wood stuff and complete that one out. There's a bit of electrical stuff there to do as well, and get the piping finished internal. But it's just been wet and muddy, and just it just hasn't been nice. So.
Mm.
The item three, Oliver May, which is a refurbishment of those bores, and you've got a draft report. Does that include the costing of?
Yes.
Is that within the budget? We were paying, was it 50% of the cost of that? I can't remember now.
Yes. So we took a item supply purchase order to a value of a quotation way back, and they're holding to that that quotation. So they've sent the final billing, which is a good sign that the final report's coming. So,
yeah. And does that suggest that it will be viable to do some work on those two boards?
They range from $350,000 to I think about $500,000, or might be $600,000 for each. So yeah, the smaller board, of course, at QDL was around $300,000 or something, I think. It's nice to do a pre-treatment there to enable us to use that one.
Yes.
And then the well, doing that one as well, I think that was somewhere in the 500, 600, but again, there are figures, okay, the final report, who knows, but I was quite surprised that they were within that style of the costing.
We haven't included the costing of upgrading those bores in any of our projections, our long-term plans.
And just touching on the blank well, the option of putting a pre-treatment there was to get us the immediate use of that water within Blaney Township. That was what the immediate request was at the time. We always looked in a longer term of putting in like a pre-treatment before our newly built Blaney water treatment plant that will come up. So we'll have that future Blaney water treatment plant, but also look at bringing that water from Blaney well in, as well as also looking at recycling water coming from the sewage wells and things like that down at Blaney. So the pathway for this pipeline to come from our well up into our water treatment plant. So whether we do it as a package deal, as an immediate effect, if we get caught with another drought, that's the option. That's what this original report was for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, any more questions? If not, those in favour?
Aye.
Carried. Now moving to 12.16, maintenance of systems. I'd like to move that.
Boom.
Councillor Lurkin, seconded. Councillor Bentley, thank you. Any questions of mine on that? If not, I'll put that person in favour.
Aye.
Carried. 12.17, performance of council systems, another one to volunteer to move this one. For Newstead, Councillor Best, thank you. Comments or questions? Yes. Now, I've got one issue which this came up with Gavin Nolan, I think you're on the call yesterday too. I raised as a potential leading indicator of population growth numbers of new lots in subdivisions, but also numbers of new water connections. And I think I might have raised it before, but I'm interested in knowing, just going back over the last, say, 2 years, we get a figure in these reports of the number of new connections, just a graph, or just get the raw numbers, graphs and graphs that are easy to look at. We get this every 2 months, I guess. What the trend has been, because I suspect, but I don't know, back to look at it, there's more and more new connections going in, and I know there's lots of subdivisions coming up in some areas of our area. It'd be pretty useful information there.
Yeah. And taking on board your comments at that meeting, to enhance that a little bit further, it would be nice to look at the amount of new connection requests coming in as well.
Yeah.
So if we're getting those requests coming through.
Okay, so this is just connections made. Yeah.
Correct. So on top of that, so we can actually see if those trends work together too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, just a bit of background. There's a bit of concern in the JO at the moment that the population projections being used in working out what water security ought to be, Department of Planning projections which project pretty well static, you know, not much change. Well, the mayors are very conscious of in the last 12 or 18 months is that's not right anymore. But to convince the Department of But the water security people of the Department of Planning, the population projection people, need to update their projections. Because they just look at the census, which looks back. What we're trying to find is something that might look forward, a leading indicator of what's going to happen. And they said, no, we took on notice that we shouldn't be relying on figures based on the past, we should be trying to project in the future, because we'll end up designing, it's not just, you know, water security infrastructure, but it's schools and hospitals and everything else, based on projections which are out of date. Under-designing things, so that's why this is pretty important.
We're basing on making indicators, not leaving.
Yeah. Any more questions? Those in favour?
Aye.
12.18. This is a report again which I think we discussed at our August workshop in lieu of the council meeting about the new pump sets at Cargo and Trigier. So I'd like to move that to a new step, Councillor Bembridge. Any questions? We dealt with this at the workshop.
So we had originally, we were looking at putting them in the order of the pumps. We have them in now, of course. So since all the August meeting, we've actually got them in and they are running as we had expected.
Yeah, good.
So we've got both Treasury and Cargo working, and so we're actually halving the amount of kilowatts to get the same for water. That's what we had previously. So it'll be nice to see the benefits of that in our operating costs.
Yeah, it's a fantastic, we commented at the workshop, it's a fantastic initiative and well done.
Yeah.
And, saves on expenses, it's very smart. Those in favour? Carried. 12.19. Purchase of new plant for cooling sloping tractors. So I'd like to move that. Councillor Newstead, seconded. Councillor Bembridge, thank you. I think Noel has sent around to us since the report came out some more details about the possible equipment to be purchased. I think what we're doing here is authorising up to $85,000 to be spent on new mowers for the embankments at Lake Rollins and the embankment behind the new reservoir car court. Just one question, but this is not authorising the purchase of a particular one, it's just authorising you to go here and select one up to $85,000.
Yes, so I've been in contact to do the due diligence of quotations without now trialling or doing, getting these people in for a demo to show whether it is acceptable to what we are in our requirement. I didn't want to waste time on getting people from Wagga, from Arimba, to come down and do that trial without having some thought from the council whether that expenditure would be acceptable to them. Because as you can tell, it's fairly high when you look at a mower and you're looking at around up to 85,000. So the quotations that I sent through, I was a bit concerned about sending through any privacy in an open council. So that's with the agreement with Gavin, with the GM. That's why I forward on those labour attachments that give you an idea. It's spending up to, I'm not sure whether the lower end of the cost of that $60,000-$70,000 is going to be acceptable when we do that demo. So instead of having to come back with a put forward a price of a quote that we've got, I'm just looking at that amount that I can be working with the supplier for this. But I suppose I've sorted out fairly broadly with everybody in the last year within this council report, as well as the following attachments that I sent for emails that I sent out. But there is a safety issue with steep slope, and I make that term steep slope. It caught us unaware. And it followed up through health and safety, which is part of health and safety requirements, of course. And when we looked into it, there were certain practices that we had been performing that didn't quite meet those. So irregardless of whether we go outside to continue on with our operations and maintenance that is required under the MSA Committee for Lake Islands, but this was really brought forward in my thinking when we were looking at how much am I going to pay as part of the 12 meg reservoir to do the embankment behind that 12 meg reservoir, because it is also a steep sloped area, and the savings of the preparation of that embankment, the savings of around $50,000, can be utilized, can be put into a mower rather than upgrading that to perform a better outcome than what we have available. So that's why it hadn't been raised before. It was going through that process of evaluating what the different costs would be to give us the finish on that of the steep embankment of our 12 meter reservoir that's brought these ideas forward.
I think you just answered my query. The cost saving of $50,000 can be achieved if we adopt a similar ground finish of the earth embankment to that on the dam wall.
Correct.
So we had some sort of spray seed or something arrangement for the embankment of the new reservoir.
Yes.
We haven't done that yet?
No.
No, okay. So this...
That's our state. That's where we're at.
Okay, so we're ready to do that?
Yes.
And that's... sort of top of the range type finish. If we have a less flash finish to that embankment, and we just mow it with this thing,
yes,
we'll save $50,000.
Correct. So there's just to spray it with seed and apply a sticky substance to hold the seed. We can spray the embankment like that, and it's around $12,000 for us to apply that. If we spray it then with the sticky substance as well as the soil base and the seed, so in other words, the area that we determine up there is rocky and it's not allowing the seeds to germinate in to grow through, so we actually apply that spray now with a soil base, that then will enable us around $24,000. That will give us the same finish as what we've got out at Lake Roland. So we've still got a bit of rock. We're still going to have those little rivulets that run down the embankment when it rains heavy. So and if we're using that spider-type mower, the four-wheel drive mower, the wheels will actually kick up on those little rivulets of the erosion, and it digs out that little rock behind it, and it creates an effect of not being as good of a finish, if you like, but of usage of that slide mallet. So if I go to the next stage for the embankment, it's a geo mesh. So you would have saw a lot of mesh, it's like a green mesh, then you go up, you stick that down, and then you coat over the top of that. So you've got a more of a binding to hold that back. So when you do mow it, you have less effect of the erosion. That's the $75,000. So for me to make best use out of a four-wheel drive mower, of a speed slope mower, that's the type of finish that I would require, which is going to cost us around $75,000 compared to $24,000 if I spray it with soil and seed, which would be the minimum requirement, I believe. If I go to a full blast, to give it like a full coating, it goes up to $150,000. But that's more like a concrete finish and things like that. So there's no maintenance to be done at all. And I think that would not be a good effect for us to have behind there. But if anyone's driving past in and down through Carcor and that on the main roads, you can certainly see that big escarpment there. If you look up where that water treatment really stands out. So, yeah. It's looking at what decision do I make. So for me to do it, you know, I look back then at what we're doing with our Lake Rollins Dam. We need to do something with that. I don't believe it's in the interest of CTW to purchase a machine just to do Lake Rollins. I think that, you know, the cost of doing that was around $20,000 a year to maintain that. But then if I put in then, say, $40,000, because $20,000 to look after Lake Rollins, then $20,000 to look after the 12-meg reservoir, steep slope, and we've done some other work around Carcor Dam where we've been moving dirt around, trying to shift that around and tidy up around that area as well. There's other steep slope areas there. So you're looking around $40,000 a year that we would be needing for a mower to come in under contract. But again, it's the saving of that $50,000 up front first is, I believe this is an option that I would recommend to the council to look at.
Are we saving the $50,000 out of grant funds now, aren't we?
That's the difference, correct, yes.
Where is it? Paying out of grant funding or paying
So the treatment, the maintenance of the reservoir would be covered by the grant.
It is, correct.
Free use is in Rogel.
Sorry, I can't just start with the grant. Unless we go over budget.
Can I go over anything over budget? You pay.
We're paying here, okay, so let's give us an idea of whether you think we might be in that territory. Because if we are, that's a real saving of 50 to that.
With the earthworks complete, that we have done now, I believe we know what the issues are and we've got enough to gauge when we deal with the